Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 124. I'm Nick alongside Emily.
I'm here.
Emily, how are you doing today?
I'm here. It feels like it's been building to this moment in our show for, like, it's hard to say like that we've been building to this moment because we're at New Blood Rising, finally.
Yes.
But there's also moments in this show that it's like, oh my god, we've been talking about this for literal years. So it feels like a lot of things have been building to this moment, but also, what the fuck has our life been if this is what we're building our lives to?
Yeah, you know? I think there is the weird element of, it's New Blood Rising, not seen tonight, the new blood.
Right. We'll get into that, though. How are you, Nick?
I'm also here.
Yeah.
I had multiple moments in the show where I went, I need to take a break.
Yeah.
Yep. I need to do something else.
Yeah, I didn't watch this all in one sitting either. We watched this separately, which is also pretty damning. We watched it separately and not in one sitting.
Before we get into this, I want to note that today's episode is brought to you by Real American Beer. Yeah, we recorded this after Raw on Netflix debuted, and fuck Hulk Hogan.
Boo. That was so funny. Part of me wants to try Real American Beer just to see if it's actually shit, because I feel like it's going to be shit.
I feel like it's going to be absolutely fine.
I feel like it's going to be a light beer. Yeah. It's going to taste like Bud Light.
Yeah, unfortunately, they don't sell the Steve Austin beer in the state of Maryland.
Oh, really? They changed that?
Yep.
That's a bummer. We used to drink that a lot.
Well, I think we would get it for WrestleMania.
Well, we would get it for, like, I know we watched it for a WrestleMania during the pandemic. We've gotten it for a couple pay-per-views since. And, like, whenever we stumbled across it in the store, we'd be like, oh, let's get that.
Yeah, they don't have it in Maryland or Jersey. So I'm like, well.
Fuck, shit. We gotta go to Delaware?
I don't even know about Delaware. Ugh. I know Pennsylvania has it. I know Virginia has it.
We were literally in Pennsylvania yesterday. We couldn't stop.
I don't know which stores in Pennsylvania. But as Emily said, we are here today to talk about New Blood Rising.
We sure are. How
are
those
Rising
New Blood?
2000.
How are those New Blood boys?
Mostly perverts now, I guess.
What do we know based on this show how the New Blood is doing?
I don't think it even got mentioned.
It didn't. Yeah. Not even a glancing mention of the New Blood versus the Millionaires Club. The Millionaires Club didn't get a mention at all.
Well, part of the problem is that they made the Millionaires Club and their entire goal was, like, actual goal was, let's get rid of everyone in the Millionaires Club.
And then everybody from the Millionaires Club just left, right?
I mean, some of them are still around, but it's been a mix of, we don't want you on TV, so we're going to write you out.
Right, like, Hulk's gone, Flair's gone,
yeah.
Sting is still here.
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Nash was in it, I guess.
Yeah, Luger.
Luger, he's not really here.
I think Savage was.
Was he here for the very beginning of it?
I remember he showed up in that one Thunder, and never again.
Oh.
And on top of everybody in the Millionaires Club not being here anymore, they've not really done much to elevate everybody else.
I mean, no. The Millionaires versus New Blood storyline got abandoned, what, like a month ago?
Yeah, I'd say Great American Bash kind of when that...
Yeah.
Yeah. But, Emily, let's actually start heading towards getting into the show, because first I have a weather report.
Oh, is there thunder?
Yes, Emily. There's always thunder. So, this and the backstage notes are going to be quick, because there's just not much going on.
That's good, though.
In regards to the tag team title match, 3 out of the 4 teams face each other on Thunder. I'm like, why? You like almost did the match without doing it.
Okay.
Filthy Animals steal the title belts again, so...
Right,
the fact
so
that,
they will have it.
Yeah, the fact that Chronic got him back on Nitro means nothing.
Right.
Lance Storm beat Mike Awesome in a flag match, which is... There are 2 poles, and first
one
to get...
One is a flagpole?
Well, there's a different flag on each one. You have to get your flag down to win.
Oh, okay.
That is where Heidi turned on Mike Awesome and revealed she's Canadian. Not here tonight, Heidi.
Yeah, I want to see that. I want to see that clip because you've described it to me. You described it to me when you watched it, and that sounds iconic. And I really want to see it.
Am I Smooth brought Daphne flowers from a secret admirer. Ooh. Notably, it was not Crowbar because he got mad and was surprised.
I miss Crowbar. We haven't seen him on Nitro in a couple weeks. Yeah. We haven't seen Daphne or Am I Smooth on Nitro in a couple weeks either.
Smooth, I think we saw.
Maybe more recently than Daphne.
Yeah, Canyon was conspiring with him, with Judy. So, Jeff Jarrett hit Jimmy Hart with a guitar because Booker T wasn't here.
Sure.
That's the logic of it.
Okay.
Kidman makes his pay-per-view match a strap match, and makes out with Reno's girlfriend again. Big Vito and Reno have a history, it seems. We'll talk about that more later on.
Yeah, please.
Oh, hey, the artist is still here in Feudy with Queewee.
Wait, the artist is still here?
Yeah, he's not going to appear on Nitro, and I don't think he doesn't go to pay-per-view, so.
Is he actually wearing an outfit, or is he wearing just, like, his street clothes?
Pretty close to street clothes.
Because I remember us mentioning that the last time we saw Taff Cappy, that it was like, he's phoning it in. He's not even wearing an outfit, or, like, a costume of some sort.
Yeah, this did not look like the artist. It looked like...
whatever the fuck a guy, yeah.
And we got a hell of a tag match of Buff Bagwell and Mean Gene against Canyon and a mystery partner. And the mystery partner came out and it was Mark Madden.
Oh my God. Why didn't you tell me to watch this Thunder?
Because it's not good.
I must see it.
That said, Canyon goes to announce his partner and there's a guy like right like under a mic next to him. He goes, "What the fuck? Bro, you suck."
Stop. Why didn't you tell me to watch this Thunder?
Gene gets low blowed and Tony Schiavone goes, "Wait, Gene didn't sell it." He was wearing a cup, but...
good.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Gene didn't sell it. What the fuck, guys?
It's in lingo, Nick. You're not cool enough to understand.
And that was Thunder.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds more exciting than New Blood Rising, honestly.
A terrible show.
Sounds great.
Backstage notes. I don't have much for this show. I might have a little more for the Nitro.
Okay.
I have one kind of big thing that affects WCW and one story that is just peak WCW.
Okay.
So the big news coming out of this show is earlier today, Brad Siegel, high up in Turner,
yeah,
overseeing WCW, he went with Russo and everybody, and we're like, all right, I have mandates. We are cutting back on production. It's like we're getting rid of two of the three big screens, less pyro. And effective late October, Thunder does not get its own taping. We are taping Thunder after Nitro.
Wow.
And I say after Nitro, but they're shifting it entirely where they are going to film the show with no breaks and insert them like live. So they're going to be 3 minutes ahead and then later they're going to be 6 minutes ahead and then later on they're going to be 9 minutes ahead.
I'm not understanding.
They're going to film it and then I guess like pause the playback or whatever and then pick it up live. It's what? A weird thing. Yeah, it's going to be overly complicated and like the pre-tapes are going to have to be like slid in live as well. It's going to be a mess.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a disaster.
So production might be about to get real funny real quick. And in that same vein, you notice at this show, there were a couple of Lance Storm shirts.
Yes.
And apparently they sold out of Lance Storm shirts at this show.
Oh, wow.
He was doing a signing and someone asked him to sign a Goldberg shirt. He's like, "Well, you're not going to get a Lance Storm shirt? Like, already sold out." He goes, "Holy shit.
I'm must huge. Be, like, this is great.
Yeah, it's going to be great." He got a check and it wasn't for that much. And he reverse engineered the number. They made and sold 144 Lance Storm shirts.
That's it?
Yep, 12 dozen. He asked someone in marketing about this, and they're like, "Well, last time we were in Canada, we didn't sell much merch." He goes, "Did you have any Canadians on the tour?" "No, I don't think we did."
Oh my God.
So,
not only do you have a Canadian on the tour, you have a Canadian whose whole thing is Canadian championships.
Yes.
Fuck you, marketing dumb fucks.
144. I can only imagine how small the merch check was.
Yeah. It's like $50.
I'd also love to see him going, "Wait, how many fucking shirts were there?"
Like doing the reverse math.
Yeah, like A Beautiful Mind, everything on the wall. Wait. Because there was also supposed to be for this show, Nitro, and Thunder.
They only got 12 dozen for three shows?
Yes. And keep in mind, that is total. So think about, like, let's just take the double and triple XLs out. There's four sizes.
God.
So each one got three dozen. There were 36 extra large shirts.
Jesus.
So it's going great. Everything's Seems going like great. It. But with that, Emily, would you like to get into this show?
Let's do it.
It's New Blood Rising, live from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, on August 13th, 2000. There were 6,600 in attendance, and apparently 5,000 paid there-ish. They gave out 3,000 free tickets. Now, you don't have to be a math expert to note those numbers don't add up.
Sure don't.
Because basically, over half the people they gave free tickets to
didn't show.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, that's not great.
Yeah, that's not a glowing recommendation.
And Emily, it's pay-per-view, so let's play The Price is Right. So, last year, this show was Road Wild, not New Blood Rising, because not a thing. Last year, this slot did 235,000 buys. How many did this show do?
I'm thinking the number starts with a 1, and I'm going to say it did 150,000 buys.
Emily, would you change your answer if I told you last month only did 100,000 for Bash at the Beach?
Woof, yeah. Sure would.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you're a little too optimistic.
97,000.
85,000.
Fuck me, yeah. That's bad.
I think it mostly floats around here for a lot of the rest of the year. And then, yeah, it's...
And then it just absolutely bottoms out. Yikes.
Look, the sad thing of this, this isn't their worst buy rate ever. It's pretty close. I think the lowest one before this would have been, I think, probably Battle Bowl with like 55,000. Stargate 95 did 75,000. So, and I guess actually earlier this year it was worse because I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, Uncensored did 60,000. So actually things are looking a little up, but 85,000 is still more than any TNA show ever did.
Really?
Yeah.
That's sad.
So just to put it in perspective.
Yeah, but again, time was different.
It was a lot easier to pirate TNA shows than it was.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's move on to the actual program. We get the opening video package, just focuses on the title match and the triple threat. Backstage, some dude bros are very hyped for the main event.
They are super hyped.
Get the opening pyro as Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Scott Hudson are on commentary. And we go immediately into 3 count with Tank Abbott versus the Young Dragons. In a ladder match for the gold record, which we knew, and now a recording contract.
Yes. So the premise of this is essentially 3 Count has to decide which thing that they value more, I guess. And they have to get, both things have to come down. But they have to pick the one that they value the most to get down first.
Yeah, the recording contract's obviously the bigger ticket item here.
But there's nothing in it for the Dragons. So there's nothing in it for the Young Dragons other than stopping 3 Count from getting what they want.
Yes, Tony Schiavone knows that. Like, they don't want it. They just want to stop 3 Count from
having it. That sucks for the Young Dragons.
Yeah.
But let's go back to the entrances, though. Because the first person that comes out on this pay-per-view, that comes down that ramp, is Mr. Tank Abbott.
Yes.
And they give him a microphone.
Did you miss his shirt?
Oh, I caught the shirt. Oh, I caught the shirt, Nick.
You want to describe the shirt?
Have you seen Mean Girls?
I forgot they did that.
Yeah,
Tank Abbott has cut the nipple holes out on the 3 Count shirt. And it's something. But Tank introduces 3 Count and then sings along into the mic, like the live mic. And he's actually on beat.
He is. Wasn't this supposed to be a new song? He has been touting that 3 Count has a new song.
They're still working on it, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
This is not a new song.
No.
But, yeah, so Tank Abbott does actually sing on beat, and he's got a little bit of a dance going.
Yeah.
You know who's not on beat? Evan Courageous.
Evan Courageous has an absolutely fucked up foot, so.
Does he? Well, it's not his foot, babe.
Or it's his ankle.
It's not his ankle, that's the problem. His whole body, his clapping is off beat. He has no idea what he's doing.
I think he's just in very severe pain and doesn't want to do this.
That's fair.
Because I think they even note that he's like, he's only at like 65%. And I'm like, he should not be out here then.
He really shouldn't be. Yeah. I didn't realize how badly injured he was. I would give him a little bit more grace. But yeah, of all three of them, he is having the biggest struggle with the count.
Tony Schiavone notes that if 3 Count lose the contract, they cannot record another CD.
Yikes.
Like, you can't get it through anybody else?
Yikes.
So the match starts and... like, the partners get on the apron to tag in a ladder match, which is no DQ, and I'm like, why? They then go for the ladders, and it's like, okay, we're done with the fake tagging portion. We're not going to pretend that's a thing anymore. I'm like, okay, good.
I mean, maybe they just forgot what they were doing. But it was confusing to me, like, the ladders were all the way up the ramp.
Yeah.
There was no fighting to get to the ladders, though. They just, like, got in the ring, quote-unquote started the match, and then ran for the ladders, and then just came back.
Yeah.
Like, why not make the ladders closer if you weren't going to do a little brawl spot?
Yeah, this is where Scott Norton... Yeah, this is where Scott Norton notes that Evan Courage is only at 65% tonight. And I'm like, you have Tank Abbott. Put him in the match.
What did you just call him?
What did I say?
It's Scott Hudson, babe.
Oh. Well.
It's not Scott Norton.
I fully wrote Scott Norton.
I know, because you corrected yourself and said it again.
Focus on the Tank Abbott portion of this.
No, because you gave me so much shit about Scott Norton. You wanted me to blow past that as so you could catch it in the edit and then make fun of me. No.
I'm trying to make a point here. My point is that you have a group that has a fourth member and you go, let's make the injured guy work. Just put Tank Abbott in the match.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. Did Evan actually get in? He was in the match. He did like yes. work, didn't he?
We'll talk a little bit about that because they have him do stuff, but he is safe here and there.
Okay, that's good.
Yang back body drops Moore partially into a ladder on the corner. Fucking ow.
Yeah, seriously.
Yang gets crotched on the rung of a ladder. Moore dives over a ladder in a 180 splash and like instinctually goes for the pin. It's like, no. Nope. They're like, oh, why did he do that? Like, no, it's just habit.
Yeah.
Like I said, the 180 splash, I'm like, I've seen Montez Ford do that, looks so good doing it, that I'm like,
okay,
yeah.
Yeah, that is the same move, isn't it?
Yeah, it just looks way better.
Yeah, okay.
The Dragons get stacked on a ladder in the corner, and Moore gets vaulted onto the stack. Helm starts to climb, and everyone brawls. Each team hits, like, a springboard doomsday device. Like, it was an interesting spot, because, like, yeah, you guys wouldn't have coordinated this in kayfabe, but you both went for the same move at the same time.
Right.
On your opponents.
They're just so connected.
Moore pushes Yang off the ladder, and Jamie hits a top-of-the-ladder diving crossbody all the way to the floor on three count. Wow.
Yeah, that was actually really cool.
Moore hits a sleeper slam on Yang, and Helms hits a jumping neckbreaker, taking Moore off the ladder. Courageous hits a spinning superplex from the top of the ladder so they don't land on the ropes, because I'm like, you're a little too close, and he, like, turns 90 degrees to land clean, and I'm like, okay, good.
Yeah, I really wish I knew that he was injured, because I would have watched him more closely in this match.
Yang hits a backflip off the ladder in the corner, and Kaz hits a spin kick into it. Courageous hits a power slam and grabs the ankle, and I'm like, yep, I think he like actually tweaked it here, because he started like really moving slow.
Okay.
Like, I think on it, he didn't get like full rotation and just kind of landed a little weird.
Okay.
Moore slingshots a ladder into Jamie by diving to the floor and hitting it on the way down, the spot that I always think of Joey Mercury on. Yang hits a springboard moonsault from the apron to Moore on the floor, and Jamie hits a top rope Frankensteiner, then Kaz and Yang each hit a top of the ladder diving splash on Shannon Moore. Jamie-san then climbs the ladder and just grabs the gold record. However, he gets pushed off the ladder and drops the gold record, and Tank Abbott catches it. And commentary's like, oh, so who gets the record then?
Yeah, why was this even a question? It should have been the person who got it off the hook. They did this with the on a pole matches too.
Yeah.
It bothers me because it's like the whole point of the match is the person who gets it off the pole should be the one who gets it. But whoever's hands it ends up in, that's who wins.
The Dragons put Evan Courageous between a ladder and Jamie hits a diving leg drop. We get a quick spot of Helms pushing over a ladder with Shannon Moore and Yang on it. And Moore just like quick jumps to the other ladder. He does it so quick, it doesn't even look spectacular. But like, oh shit, that's actually impressive when you think about it. Jamie-san powerbombs Shannon Moore off the ladder. Tank then pushes over Kaz and Helms' ladders, kind of weird. Evan Courageous then climbs up and thankfully grabs it, because I realized, I'm like, oh, he didn't take a bump minus that superplex off the ladder once.
Good. In hindsight, good.
Yeah, so he grabs the contract, Tank kind of takes it from him and dances to the back with the contract and gold record in hand as three count are in the ring, like, wait, what? So they've won, but Tank Abbott has all their shit.
Yeah, so this kind of... Is this, like, building dissension?
I guess.
Are they turning Tank Abbott into, like, this, like, psychotic, crazy fan? Or maybe, like, controlling manager character?
We'll have to see, but... Thoughts on this match?
Oh, this... spoiler, this is gonna be the best match of the night. 100%.
Yes, they actually gave them some time, and it's like, oh, wow, they managed to do great things with it. Like, it's a little sloppy in parts, but, like, that's forgivable because of the kind of chaos of it.
Yeah, and that kind of adds to it. I mean, these two teams are very, like, chaotic, high-flying, flippy, but in a way that, like, you trust the work that they're going to do. Like, you know the Young Dragons, if they are a little chaotic and high-flying, they're going to be fine, and they're going to put it together. Like, these two teams work really well together, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think, additionally, the two things above the ring hurt the pacing a little bit, because... It's just like, yeah, the Dragons just kind of won, but now we have more match. It was kind of strange with that. But honestly, special shout out to Shannon Moore in this match. I think he went a little bit above and beyond.
Really?
Okay. I thought so.
I didn't notice him amongst the rest, but...
I noticed when in my notes, a lot of my notes were, Shannon Moore does or takes a cool thing.
Okay, cool. I'll take that.
That's, I also just checked my notes. We have two more Nitros with Tank Abbott, apparently.
That's it?
Yep.
Oh, bless. So whatever character they're building to, it's not going to matter.
Yeah. Let's go backstage. The Filthy Animals are in the Cat's office. They want to ref the tag title match and get a title shot on Nitro. The Cat's like, why would I do that? They're like, we'll help you beat the Great Muta. So.
Yeah, okay.
He's like, sure. He's like, I don't need help, but sure. And then Disco tries to like fist bump him and he just goes, get the hell out of my office.
I did finally notice the Ray horns here.
Yeah.
My big question is, how are they staying to his head?
I don't know.
Are they glued? But I also have another Rey Mysterio note. I think Dominic Mysterio is in the audience for this. So there is a spot in the main event where there is a kid behind the ring announcer. And he's about Dominic's age at this time. He's Hispanic and he has blonde dyed hair. He's wearing a red t-shirt. I think it's Dominic.
This is 5 years before Boy Out of Pole, so.
He's really little.
They're also in Canada. That's the only reason why I'm like, yeah. Like, they're not near him at all.
It looked like him. I don't know.
For the record, a quick Google search, I'm not yielding any results.
Right. I did Google search too, but it looked like him. The age looked right. I think it might have been him. And it was on, it was front row, but not on the hard camera, like behind the hard camera. So, like, you know, a spot that a family member would be.
Let's move into match number two. It's the Great Muta versus Ernest the Cat Miller.
When did this match get sanctioned?
I don't know.
Why is this a match?
I don't. They attacked the cat a few weeks ago.
So Muta is the one?
I was confused.
I thought I had missed something, so I'm glad I didn't.
The cat grabs a mic pre-match and says he's going to whoop Muta's great ass and then hits him with the mic. Cat hits a 10-punch spot in the corner and then a dancing elbow. Muta rakes the eyes, hits his flailing elbow drop. Muta then works over the arm, but Cat keeps getting the ropes. This prompts, we want Brett chance.
Yeah, get used to that.
Cat hits kicks, but gets chopped to the throat. Tigress then comes down into the ring as the Filthy Animals representative. I'm like...
All she does is just like stand there to quote-unquote distract.
Just stuff later, but I'm like...
She's just standing there.
They guaranteed him victory and only sent Tigress. I'm like, what? Like, it works, but yeah.
But like, that was your whole plan?
Muta keeps working over Cat in the ring until Cat kicks Muta to the floor and then chokes him with a cable. Cat hits a dancing chop in the ring, but is then caught with a dragon screw and Muta pivots to working the legs. Muta hits a backbreaker and Cat dodges a moonsault. Muta missed the cat and the ref immediately goes to wipe the cat's face. It was like, oh, that's weird that...
Okay, I've never seen a referee do that before.
I guess it's usually kind of meant to be behind the ref's back, but like... That should be a DQ then, if you see this.
If you're going to him and helping him get the mist out of his eyes, yeah, you should have DQ'd him.
Tigress hits a diving chair shot behind the ref's back to the Great Muta. Muta kicks out once the cat crawls over, but Cat hits a kicking combination and a spin kick for the win. It's like, oh, you just beat the Great Muta. Okay.
Yeah, way to like bury the Great Muta even more so.
Yeah, they're not putting him in a high position.
But this is probably the best like Muta has looked since he's come on. He's moving more. He's like actually trying. I don't know. I've been really underwhelmed with Great Muta since he's come on to WCW. And this is the first time that I'm like, you might actually have some skill sets that I'm just not seeing.
Yeah, as I noted before, he's about to pivot his whole style. I think he would admit this is not a good run for him. This match was fine, but like mostly heatless. We didn't really care. The crowd didn't really care. Like, there was not enough story to be like, let's put this on pay-per-view.
No, I don't really understand why this was on pay-per-view. It was never really explained either.
We got to kill some time.
Pretty much. We got to fill some time. Kill some time, fill some time, whatever.
Speaking of filling time, backstage, Buff Bagwell is looking for his mom.
This is not filling time. This is setting up for our next match.
Yes, it is Buff Bagwell versus Canyon. Judy Bagwell on a pole match.
It's happening! It's here!
Canyon drives Judy out on a forklift to ringside and then raises the pallet she's standing on up in the air.
So they really do call this Judy on a pole until the very last second.
Yes.
Like, Tony on commentary is like, oh, I'm learning now that she is on a forklift for reasons. And then it's because, you know, she's fat.
Like, her wrists are tied to the actual, like, back of the forks. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's kind of it.
That's it. She's just high up. But we need to, like, really settle into the gravitas of this moment. When we started talking about WCW, it was this match and the Viagra on a pole that you told me, like, were the quintessential matches of WCW. And
yeah,
why
I didn't realize they were within like 2 weeks of each other.
And it was like your selling point of why this company is so ridiculous and stupid and why we're doing this. So I feel like we've been building to Judy on a Pole for years. Like, you've been listening back to the early episodes. We talked about this in like episode 3.
Yeah.
We are episode 124 and we're finally doing it. It's finally happening. Congratulations, we're here.
Canyon gets in the ring with the mic, asks who's better than Canyon.
Who better?
Canyon points out there's supposed to be a pole match, but he's searched this whole godforsaken country, and he couldn't find a pole that would hold Judy up, so it's now a Judy Bagwell on a forklift match.
I really just think they didn't think through how to get Judy on a pole, and then when they actually had to put some thought into it, they're like, oh, this was never going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck were we thinking?
Well, also, most pole matches are get the thing down.
And use it as a weapon.
But yeah, like, get it down and use it. This is win by pinfall.
To save Judy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as a reminder, if Canyon wins, Judy becomes his Kimberly.
Right. This match has a lot going on in it. We really should just go.
Yeah. Buff sees this, comes out for the match.
Good guy Buff, though. He does not immediately run into the ring to attack Canyon. He goes to the forklift and tries to get his mother down.
Yeah.
Like priorities. I respected that.
Yeah, it's almost like, yeah, unfortunately, he should have used this logic weeks ago and stopped bringing her to the arena.
Sure, yeah.
Canyon stops Buff from lowering the forks. Buff throws Canyon into the crowd and then goes after him as opposed to lowering the forks.
Sure.
They brawl around the crowd until coming back to the ring. Buff hits a back body drop and a swinging neck breaker. Buff goes for a 10-punch spot, but Canyon hits a low blow and a second rope Russian leg sweep. Canyon then reveals he hid snips or, like, you know, like kind of like wire cutters. Mm-hmm. Kind of attached to one of the ring posts.
So it looks like he gaff taped, like, black electric. I don't know how to describe gaff tape for people who don't know what gaff tape is.
It's like duct tape.
It's like duct tape, but like used for shows and shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
It looks like he taped these wire cutters to the back of the turnbuckle so that they would blend in and they'd go unnoticed. So he could use them in this to rip off the turnbuckle.
Yeah, because you have to, like, actually, like, fully cut something. Yeah. I didn't really realize that, because I'm like, I guess, yeah, we don't see the exposed turnbuckle spot often.
Not in this era.
Yeah, because WWE, it's like, there's just, like, you pull a rope, and it's free.
Yeah, it's just, like, shoelace tied on, supposedly, in WWF.
Buff vaults on a whip into the corner, but Canyon catches him and hits a sit-out Alabama slam. Buff starts to come back, McKinnon slows him down with a Cobra clutch, and did you know how much fucking Buff Bagwell was openly talking during this match?
No, I didn't.
The mics didn't really pick him up, but you can just see him calling spots throughout this whole match.
Admittedly, this match is not about the wrestling. I wasn't paying too much attention to the actual wrestling going on here.
Buff powers up on the arm drops, but Canyon hits a neck breaker. Canyon wants the Canyon cutter, but Buff pushes Canyon into the exposed corner and then drops him on it. But Canyon turns around with a Canyon cutter and Buff kicks out.
Wow.
Then we get DDP's music hitting.
That's why I'm saying I wasn't paying attention to the wrestling in this match. So DDP's music hits, and I am convinced that this is DDP's return. I'm like, this is a stupid match for DDP to return in. Like, but sure, great. I'm excited to have DDP come back and destroy Canyon. Cool, let's do it. It's not DDP. Who is it?
It's former WCW champion David Arquette.
What the fuck?
The funny thing is, I told you he was coming back, and I forgot it was here. So, same thing, like, DDP's music hit, and I went, oh, I guess he's back. And I'm like, oh, fuck, it's David Arquette.
Nope, sure isn't. Here comes David Arquette.
Commentary does explain, like, he was filming a movie in the area, and it's like, yeah, might as well just bring him in for it, whatever.
But, like, again, this match is so in the, like, history books of WCW's downfall, and it has everything. It has everything.
New York's hottest club is Judy Bagwell on a forklift.
Oh my god. A stupid gimmick. A wrestler who's stolen someone else's gimmick.
Someone's
in-ring talking,
someone's
calling
like
the
60-year-old mother.
Cutting turnbuckles with DQ-able stuff. And fucking David Arquette.
So Arquette is here to assist Canyon. Bagwell hits clotheslines thanks to the distraction. Arquette hits Buff with a hard hat that Canyon had coming out.
What did the hard hat come from?
Canyon was wearing it in the forklift coming out.
Oh, okay.
That shot only gets a two. Buff fights off both men, hits a double blockbuster for the win. He then lowers the forklift and retrieves his mother.
Oh my god.
Post-match, Canyon hits a Canyon cutter on Arquette.
Amazing. This is the match where if you have a friend that's like, I've never seen WCW, what should I know? Put this match on.
Yeah.
This is WCW.
You have to put on, like, Ray versus Eddie at Halloween Havoc 97.
Yeah.
And then you put this on and go.
Where it started, where it's ending. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Do you have any thoughts on the actual match of this?
No, I wasn't paying attention to the wrestling. The wrestling was not even secondary. It was, like, fourth in line of things that I was paying attention to here.
Honestly, I think them doing so much weird shit on Nitro, like, I feel like this could have just been on Nitro.
It could have been, but I'm so glad that it wasn't. I feel like if it was on Nitro, this we wouldn't have gotten David Arquette. And it would have, I wouldn't have felt as spectacular. That being said, they put Viagra on a pole on Nitro, so.
Yeah. So I don't know this for certain either way. Do you think Judy ever appears again?
I think she has one more appearance.
Yeah, because she doesn't really do matches, I have no way of really tracking to see if, you know, when her last match is.
Like, Pops just disappeared.
Yeah.
The parent figure characters just vanish into the background. But I think that Judy has at least one more appearance.
So this lived up to the hype for you?
Yes. Amazing.
It is still fucking stupid.
It's fucking insane. This is faff. This is where I'm like, this is stupid ass wrestling. It's not... There's a difference between, like, the finger poke of doom and Judy Bagwell on a forklift.
Well,
it's different levels of this is fucking insane. One is insulting to the industry. One is like, what are we doing, lads?
I think it's because the actual match, again, is fine. Yeah. It's two guys who can work.
Yeah.
It's not, like, it's stupid faff around, it's fine.
Yeah. But again, that's what happened with the Viagra on a poke match, too. Like, it was a stupid gimmick with good-ass wrestling happening in the ring.
You keep putting wrestlers of too much quality, and I hate putting Buff Bagwell in that category, but...
Listen, call spade a spade. He's a good wrestler, man.
He's in the River Canyon.
I think this just kind of... It really encapsulates what's wrong with WCW, though. If we're going back to the heart of this podcast...
Oh, no, our next match does that.
Yep, but I'm still going to say it. I think that this brings us back to the heart of what this podcast is, of, like, what happened to WCW? Why did it die so drastically and so dramatically? And it is that. It is, we have these talented wrestlers, but we're not giving them the time of day, even when they're in the ring showing us how good they are and how good they can be. We're overshadowing it with a stupid gimmick that just brings the whole thing down a couple of notches. It takes the seriousness away. Like, why would you take anything that's going on in this match seriously, in this industry seriously? They're making a joke out of something that could be good. And that's what destroys the company.
I think there is that. And I joke, the thing wrong with WWE is the next match. And I believe that, because this is ridiculous. We knew about this 100 episodes ago, you know?
Yeah.
The thing everybody knows. It's comical. People will seek it out. Then you have shit like the next match, which is just an abomination. Mm-hmm. And it just gets glossed over because it's not funny.
Exactly. That's true, though. But again, this next match has kind of a dumb gimmick with good wrestlers. And it just shits on the fact that these wrestlers are actually talented.
I do have two things to note before we get into the next match, because we have a backstage segment and then a commentary update. Outside the arena, a limo and police escort arrive. And I was like, who's this going to be? And like, oh, it's Lance Storm. That makes sense.
That makes sense. He's a triple champion.
We then go to commentary. Tony Schiavone notes that Goldberg was in a motorcycle accident at Sturgis last night.
So it's funny that you mentioned that this pay-per-view spot last year was Road Wild.
Yes, because that was
Sturgis. Yeah. So he was there doing something for the motorcycle show?
A lot of guys in WWE are into bikes and all that. Sorry, into fat hogs.
Okay, let's say bikes.
But yeah, he apparently was in a motorcycle accident last night, and he's not here yet. And it's like, oh, he might not be in the triple threat match either. And apparently this accident was legit.
Okay, I was kind of wondering.
Yeah, I don't know how banged up he is from that, but we'll talk about that more during his match, because this seems like an out to just have him do a thing or two during his match, right. And we'll get there. Let's go into our next match. It is a four-way tag match for the WCW Tag Team titles. It is Chronic versus the Misfits in Action versus the newly healed Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare versus the Perfect Event with the Filthy Animals as referees. And I say the Filthy Animals referees because Disco is the main ref, but Hoovy, Tigress, and Ray are all wearing ref shirts and are enforcers on the outside.
So they're essentially acting as, like, almost lone lumberjacks to, like, enforce people to stay in the ring? Is that their whole goal?
Yeah, the thing of an enforcer is a very outdated thing at this time. Like, they'll break it out here and there. Like, it's basically, like a bit of a lumberjack and, like, a backup referee.
Okay.
Oh, and if you notice, I did not mention one of the filthy animals. Carlos goes over to commentary.
Carlos?
Yes. Conan. Because Mark Madden fucking refers to him as Carlos.
Yes.
And Emily, they got it like that. We got it like that.
Nick has been saying this around the house since we watched the show.
It's all they fucking say in this match.
He wants me to say it so badly and I refuse.
I don't.
Every time, like, we were making dinner, like, yeah, we got it like that. I'm making coffee this morning. You got it like that? Like, stop.
Well, commentary does two things. It is, we got it like that, and it's Conan absolutely fucking burying everyone in this match. And not in, like, a fun, effective heel way, in just, like, a douchebag way.
God.
Because the Misfits in Action come out with Super Soakers. And
I like the Super Soakers. I think that's fun, and I think they should keep that. I think that works with their characteristics.
Yeah, I'm
gonna keep it.
I'm neutral on it.
I like it.
Disco grabs a mic, insults the crowd, and says he knows everyone in this match wants to kick his ass, but like, we're refs, so you will be disqualified and fined, and then I'll have you wrestling polar bears or fucking something.
What? Sorry.
Like, we're sending to Saskatoon or something.
Saskatoon.
Adams and Palumbo start this match. They don't do much. Adams sends Palumbo to the floor, and the filthy animals attack Palumbo. Stasiak comes in and eats a full Nelson slam. It's where I first note, Conan is killing me.
Yeah, he's not a good commentator.
At one point, they're like, oh, are we going to see something? No, because they won't sell it.
Yeah, again, in jokes, brother.
O'Hara hits a diving front flip for kind of no reason, and then a back spin kick. Brian Clark hits a tilt-a-whirl slam and Disco slow counts. Oh, he doesn't want them to win.
Wow, what a shady ref.
Then this match, like, it pseudo turns into like a 4-on-4 match. Because they only do heels versus faces. I mean, kind of smartly, but the heel teams and the face teams are just openly tagging between each other.
I wasn't totally following what the rules of this were either. Like, was it like a tornado match title? Like,
no, it's just the two people are in the ring and everybody else has to tag in and out to be legal. O'Hare hits a pop-up spine buster on Morris and Tigress hits a bronco buster on Morris. Ray goes for one, but Morris gets his foot up right into Ray's balls. Morris falls into Stasiak's crotch and Lash tags in, hits his shake, rattle, and roll, and Disco slow counts again. So he doesn't want the Misfits in Action to win either.
Great. So this match could go forever.
Stasiak hits a gut buster, Disco slow counts them. He doesn't want the perfect event to win. We never actually get the rookies going for a pin, so I don't know if it would have been a fast count or what.
They were so shiny. Did you see how much they looked like Ken dolls? They were shiny.
That's the nicest thing you can say about Mark Jindrak, because there's not much else nice to say. Uh-huh. The four heels work over Morris, and the filthy animals stop the faces from helping. We get more slow counts, and I lost the will in this match.
The crowd did too, obviously, because we got another We Want Brett chant.
Yep, that's my next note.
I was losing the will. I was bored to tears.
I think the worst thing I could say here is my next note is more repetitive stuff with the filthy animals.
Yeah.
So Chronic attempts high times, and they're stopped by the Dark Carnival, who come out to interfere.
Why do we need another team out here?
And then they just leave. They don't ensure anybody wins. Palumbo rolls up Adams, once again a slow count. Clark hits a meltdown on Palumbo, but Disco just refuses to count to three.
At what point are we like, okay, let's get another ref out here?
Adams press slams Stasiak onto the rookies. They hit high times on Palumbo, and Lieutenant Loco then comes in to take Disco's ref shirt, and he counts the pin for not his team. So, you're losers by the way of Lieutenant Loco, the Misfits in Action. You're winners and still tag champs, Chronic.
Cool.
What the fuck, guys?
This is a dumbass match.
Like, the filthy animals killed the first 98% of this match. The stupid logic of Chavo willingly having his team lose
there
killed the last
two. There is no logic. There's not even logic to call stupid. There was no logic. You can't say that there was any, like, psychology, any planning, any thought put behind that. No. This is also the point in the show where I was thinking to myself, this absolutely does not feel like a pay-per-view. No. Nothing about this feels like a pay-per-view. Nothing about this feels like a spectacle. Nothing here feels like it's worthy of being paid for. That being said, duty on a forklift, I'll pay for it every day.
Yeah, I think that doesn't help that there wasn't really a guiding hand in this match to help get through it. Maybe Hugh Morris be the most. But yeah, the filthy animals just taking over this match as the refs and enforcers and commentary. It's like, why even have the match?
It just made it so bad.
Terrible. What a shame.
What a shame. Tragic.
Backstage, Pamela Pumpkins is with Jeff Jarrett. Jarrett says Pamela wore Gene out last night, and he's going to win the title tonight.
Cool.
Let's move into our next match, which I guess I had higher hopes than some of the other matches for.
I mean, we saw these two wrestle well.
We see prior. Them wrestle all the fucking time is the problem.
Yeah, but hey, we used to love when Billy and Ray would wrestle every week. That was the highlight of our show for a lot of the time.
Yeah, but the match is Shane Douglas with Tori versus Billy Kidman in a strap match. And this is not a traditional strap match. This is also a win by pin.
Sure.
So there's multiple stipulations tonight that normally are not a pinfall match. And you went, fuck it.
Pinfall. Can we talk about how good Tori looks?
She always looks good.
God, she looks so fucking good.
Well, according to commentary, she's like two cheeseburgers away from being obese.
God, fuck yourself. The 90s were a toxic ass time.
Shane Douglas grabs a mic, cuts a very generic heel promo, and notes that it, and like has to note it's a strap match, because if you didn't watch Thunder, you wouldn't know that.
I mean, they come out with a massive strap, so you could figure it out, but it's not a traditional strap match.
Yeah, Tony Schiavone notes that, but I guess no one tells the crowd.
Yeah.
We get a slow start, but Kidman keeps tripping Douglas up with the strap. Commentary has decided Tori is now fat.
Stupid.
Kidman pulls Douglas into the ring post and then chokes him with the strap. Kidman whips Douglas to almost no reaction.
Oh, yeah. The crowd is already so turned off from the match that we just watched. They're not back for this because they don't care.
The one percenter, Billy Kidman. Douglas crotches Kidman with the strap and then chokes him. Douglas hits his reverse neck snap and rakes the eyes. He then locks in a knuckle lock and overpowers Kidman. And I'm like, oh, God, guys. Yeah, that's what we're doing.
We have no faith in our performers.
Douglas weakly whips Kidman with the strap, but Kidman powers up and hits punches in the corner, and then a diving Hurricane Rana. Kidman hits a sky high and rips Shane's shirts off and whips him with the strap some more. Kidman hits Douglas in the balls with the strap and then hits Kidman Faction to no reaction.
Nope.
Tori then takes her shoe off and goes to hit Billy, but accidentally hits Douglas. Douglas then drops Kidman's face into the ropes. Ow.
Commentary did have a great line when she took her shoe off, though. She's hitting him with his shoe. Mark Madden goes, oh, she's turned heel. I thought that was funny.
Douglas hits a Pittsburgh plunge with help from Tori, just like getting in the ring and rolling him through a pin, but Kidman kicks out. Kidman pushes Douglas into Tori, which like doesn't do much. Like I feel like she was supposed to like, take a bump there.
It's so hard to tell.
He hits the Kid Crusher, also known as the Unpretty Her.
Hell yeah.
Because he does the big jump with it. Christian would just drop.
Mm.
And Kidman wins.
Whoa.
Post-match, Tori comes in with a chair, but drops it when confronted. Kidman then grabs her and spanks her with the strap until Shane Douglas attacks him and then fucking hangs Billy Kidman.
Sure does.
Like, Jesus Christ.
Literally hangs him. He is suspended by his neck with the strap. His feet are dangling.
Then we get a top three pop of the night with fucking Big Vito coming out.
Vito! My hero!
He makes the save. We get a small Vito chant.
Honestly, who could have seen that coming? Who had that on their bingo card? A Vito chant?
Reno then attacks Vito and they brawl until Reno bails. But
I still have no idea.
A line of commentary absolutely broke you.
Yeah, so apparently the two men, Reno and Vito, have some tension. And that is explained via commentary. They're making eye contact.
No, we saw the eye contact.
This is explained through commentary by them saying, look at that eye contact.
Look at the eye contact. Play.
Jesus.
We're not here to play.
I'm like, eye contact? We're putting this whole storyline on eye contact? I don't even know who this fucker is.
It wasn't even active eye contact. It was previous eye contact. It was from Thunder.
This eye contact. These two men must hate each other. What?
This match was also not good.
What? It's so frustrating.
They are murdering this crowd.
Yeah, man. Can you imagine paying for this show? I don't blame the 2,000 people that didn't show up with a free-ass ticket. But, like, it's so frustrating because, like, I loved Billy Kidman for so long. When Kidman gets a little bit of fire under him, he can be great. But you also can tell when he doesn't care. He telegraphs how he feels about his match, how he feels about his opponent through his moveset, for better or for worse. There were moments in this match where I could see both parts of that coming out of him. But it's just frustrating that I can even see that. It's frustrating that he's put in that position. Because, like I said before, we looked forward to Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio matches. That was our shining light. That was our best bit for, like, a good chunk of time in the beginning of this podcast. When I can tell how you're feeling in a match and you're very much not into it, I'm like, you're killing me, man.
I mean, I imagine some of that is he went from feuding with Hulk Hogan to having to face Hulk Hogan, but not really feuding with him.
Right.
And then he was just off the last show. And now...
he's getting dicked around.
Yeah.
How long? Does he stay on till the end?
Thank God he has the Viagra if he's getting dicked around.
Fuck you.
Yeah, he's here until the very last show.
God bless him.
Remember, he could have left with the Radicals.
I'm wondering if he's regretting that.
Yeah, maybe. Let's move on to go backstage. Booker T arrives at the arena, but is attacked by Jeff Jarrett, who just emerges from behind a bus.
Surprise! Blah.
Jarrett slams a car door on Booker's leg repeatedly, and I hope that made you horny, because it's time for ROTC.
What does ROTC stand for?
That's right. It's career versus streak. The two stare down until Shawn does a throat slash and keeps ducking the Undertaker strikes and hits hard chops in the corner. We get a Shawn turnbuckle spot early on, followed by snake eyes and a big boot. Undertaker goes for old school, but seemingly lands awkward on his leg before going for a choke slam.
Are you calling?
But Shawn keeps kicking the legs of the dead man.
Are you calling Shawn's retirement match?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to do this match, Emily.
What do you mean? You just called it. Let's just move on.
I really debated taking notes for that whole match, and I went, no.
Did you really just, watch it, or did you do that from memory?
No, I watched it.
Good for you.
Yeah, ROTC stands for Rip Off the Camouflage, which it's not the fucking stipulation of this. Again.
Incorrect.
Yeah.
But I've always been annoyed by this, because ROTC, Rip Off the Camouflage, why isn't it just Rip Off the Clothes? Rip Off ROTC?
I think they started saying Rip Off the Clothes, and then they changed it to Camouflage.
And I think that they might have done that because they wanted to really hammer in the, army angle. ROTC is already army, so you can do both pervy and army. It's fine.
I think that might have been a standards and practices thing.
You think so?
Advertising a rip-off-the-clothes match, that's skeezy.
Yeah.
I'm aware.
It is skeezy.
So our rip-off-the-camouflage match is between Major Guns and Miss Hancock. Hancock mimes getting shot in the head on her way out, and I'm like, yeah, I feel
same
that.
Same.
They start in the ring, and Hancock offers a handshake, and Guns slaps her. I'm like, oh, what a face.
What a face.
Almost immediately, Catfight gets the fway pop. Gets the stake and blowjobs pop.
I don't even know what to say about this match. We did see the mud pit, so that is going to come into play eventually.
They actually do some moves.
You're right. These two women actually do wrestle, which is shocking.
It also feels like they put together what are the moves that will leave us in sexy positions. Because we get a jackknife pin, and Jesus Christ, that's one of the biggest pops of the night.
Oh, I know.
But I'm like, what are the fucking rules? Because that's the first pin attempt we get. And I'm like,
yes.
Again.
Is the rule to rip off the clothes? Is the rule to get into the mud? Is the rule to get a pin? What's the goal here, folks? Is it just to look at pretty ladies and go, bleh? Then sure, that's a stipulation on its own.
Yeah, bra and panties matches, the goal is you have to get them down to that.
Yeah.
Once someone is stripped, you win.
Right.
So I...
who the hell knows?
You know, I didn't think that there would be a through line between Judy Bagwell and a forklift, Shane Douglas versus Billy Kidman, and the rip off the clothes match, but... all matches with stipulations they just have as a front.
Yep. I just... also, I want to, shout out the wardrobe department, I guess. There were... the clothing that these women are wearing is so tiny. The bottoms are really tiny. The bralette is really tiny. The bikini top, the Major Gun is really tiny. Not a nip slip. Not a lip slip. Nothing popped out. I don't know how that happened, because there were so many moves where I was like, we're about to see labia. This is gonna get bad.
Well, you were noting how much gear adjusting there was too,
but nothing happened. Nothing popped.
Well, they also have to do more moves than that.
There was one roll up where I was like, there's a reason they're not doing this toward the camera, because I'm pretty sure we can see vagina.
Oh yeah, that was the jackknife pin.
Yeah.
Hancock rips off Guns' white tank top. Commentary says, there goes the first piece of camouflage.
That is the one thing she's wearing that is not camouflage.
Guns kicks out of a pin, and commentary notes that they are contractually obligated to go in the mud.
What?
It is later revealed that they're kidding, or are they? Who fucking
knows? Was there a contract for this match?
Guns hits a facebuster and rips off the top layer shorts on Hancock. Hancock then hits a diving crossbody and a kip-up.
Stacey Keibler kipped up. I was very impressed by that.
Which, Hancock kips up. That sounds something. It's like, yeah.
That sounds like an innuendo.
Guns kicks Hancock in the stomach and hits a sunset flip.
Note that.
Guns ducks a crossbody, and Hancock grabs her stomach at ringside.
ouchie, must be hurting from that crossbody or whatever it was.
Hancock rips off Guns' shorts, so Guns takes Hancock's top. Hancock drops Guns in the mud, and then Guns pulls Hancock in. Hancock throws Guns around and starts to dance sexy until, ow, my stomach, oh, I have to grab it. And Guns rolls her up, and Guns wins.
As they're celebrating, Miss Hancock is still in the mud, like, writhing in pain. David Flair, out like a shot, runs down the ramp and jumps in the mud to help Stacy. I'm flip-flopping between Stacy and Miss Hancock.
Yeah.
Whatever, it's Stacy.
They're about to start doing that anyway.
Yeah. And he comes in to help her, and now we're all like, something happened. What's wrong? What happened to Miss Hancock?
I know a Russo bullshit a mile away.
This is disgusting. This is a disgusting angle, and I hate Vince Russo for this.
I don't fully know where this goes. So
I hope nowhere.
But we would have already lived through him doing a fake miscarriage angle with, I think that was Terry.
Oh, yeah.
Because D'Lo caused it, but then he was like, oh, there was never actually a baby, and she faked them. Yeah.
Yes, I do remember that. Oh, my God.
Which somehow the miscarriage angle turns into what a vile woman.
But what if we just rinse and repeat and do that again in WCW?
What a Jezebel.
The story of this is supposedly that Miss Hancock was pregnant with David's baby, and that was a miscarriage. That match caused a miscarriage.
Well, Emily, can I give you a terrible tease? The one thing I do know about this story is, Emily, are you sure it's David's baby?
Oh my God.
I'm 90% sure this gets dropped before anything happens.
But
Much like another Flair baby. Remember Lacey Evans?
Lacey Evans was pregnant, yeah! God! I hate wrestling. I hate wrestling so much. Oh my God. But now it's shoot. Now it's all very real. And Tony Schiavone is on commentary like, yes, that young woman, her name is Stacy Keibler, and we're going to get her
into an
ambulance.
They put on the fucking Owen voice. I'm like,
fuck you.
They
really do. They really do. Like, give Tony the fucking Emmy because he's acting his little heart out. They're like, we're going to get her into an ambulance. We're going to follow up with some updates.
Well, first they're like, oh, I guess we're going to go to an interview with Vampiro.
Yeah, like, cut away. We got to figure this out. Whatever. Go away.
He's like, Sting's nine lives are up tonight, and it's the demon's big test.
I don't give a fuck. They just faked a miscarriage.
Back to commentary. And I'm like, bold choice to go from your boner match to this is serious.
Yeah, seriously. I'm sorry, but to get into the brain of a skeevy man in the year 2000, let me just like shift my brain real quick. Isn't the like least attractive thing a woman can be is pregnant? Like, you don't want the sexy girl to get pregnant, right? That ruins her. Isn't she ruined now?
I don't.
In the mind of Vince Russo in the year 2000, isn't a pregnant woman a ruined woman?
I don't fucking. I did get a weird laugh out of seeing her on the gurney covered in mud in a bikini. I'm like, this visual is not the tone of what you're going for.
The paramedics were getting covered in mud, too. Like, bless them for doing their job.
But fuck everything about this.
Fuck this.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Vince Russo is married. His wife was at least aware that this was being written down on paper. Disgusting.
I mean, I ran you through the list of characters.
Oh, yeah, you did. I think Vince Russo has daughters, too.
I don't know.
Disgusting.
You want to move on?
Yeah. Let's shift out of that.
It's the demon, Dale Torborg versus Sting. Oh, get him in, Emily.
This is the last time we see him, isn't it?
No, Nitro.
Dale, no.
Sting rappels into the stage. The two brawl on the ramp. They just generally brawl on ringside. Until in the ring, Sting hits a Stinger Splash, then a Scorpion Death Drop, and wins in like 50 seconds.
So this match comes on, and the first thing I say as it comes on the TV is, this really should be a squash match. And you're sitting next to me at this point, and you just don't say anything.
Well, you like started to get up, so I'm like, no, you have to look at the screen for a second.
And I say, this really should be a squash match. 10 seconds later, oh, it is a squash match.
Post-match, Vampiro and Muda attack Sting. Then they go to the stage and try to hang Sting.
Why are we doing this?
I don't.
Why are we doing this?
Chronic make the save as the demon just kind of watches.
Of all the teams to make the save, why Chronic?
Because they attacked them earlier, so.
I guess.
Bryan Adams grabs a mic, challenges them to a match later on. What the fuck was the point of the Sting match?
They'd been talking about Demon versus Sting for so long, they had to do something with it. So this was the best way to be like,
but the feud
this.
Is Vampiro versus Sting.
But they keep saying Demon versus Sting, and they never retconned it. So this was a good way to be like, fuck Dale, we're done.
Yeah. I was looking at something, and people were like, is this like a Jeff Hardy Victory Road thing? Like, did he show up, like, fucked up? But, like,
No. Dale just got screwed.
Backstage, Booker T is getting his knee looked at and is in a bunch of pain, tells the camera to get the fuck out.
Good. Smart.
Let's move into a match I was very excited for coming in.
I had no idea what I was getting into.
It is Lance Storm versus Mike Awesome for the WCW Canadian title. Lance Storm gets the full Goldberg treatment, and Tony even, like, notes, like, oh, he's doing the Goldberg.
Well, he's in Canada, and he's a triple champion for Canada. Yeah, he should get a red carpet rolled out.
Lance grabs a mic, hypes up the Canadian crowd, and says he's become a marked and hated man in the U.S. He also says he's pretty worried about the U.S., and the result may be a terrorist attack in the back. It's like, oh!
What year is it?
Storm says per 22B or something in the Canadian rulebook, I name a special referee, Brett. Yeah, he has to, like, shake his head, like,
yeah, he's
Jacques,
like,
Rougeau.
It's not Brett.
I'm the Mountie. So, yeah, Jacques Rougeau is now our, I guess, special guest enforcer. Speaking of the enforcers. Storm then calls for the anthem to be played, and Mike Awesome sits down through all this. Mark Madden feigns tears after.
Yeah, because Mark Madden has decided he's going to become Canadian, like, he's talking about changing his citizenship at some point here.
Yeah, he talks about being Canadian. They're like, you're from Pittsburgh.
Right. The least Canadian city in America, I think.
It at least has a hockey team.
Oh, that's true. They do have a hockey team.
The match starts. Awesome clubs Storm and hits an implant buster. Awesome dominates with mounted punches and a leg drop. Storm hits a super kick, then throws Awesome into the ring post. Lance Storm chops Awesome in the corner and goes for a suplex, but Awesome counters and sends Storm to the floor. Mike Awesome grabs a table as commentary talks Mighty Heidi. Lance Storm runs Awesome into the guardrail and then hits a springboard dropkick back in the ring. Awesome catches Storm on a springboard and hits a belly-to-belly suplex. Awesome goes up top and slips on the top rope. And, like, man just lay on his feet and hits a clothesline. And,
yeah, he does save this.
Yeah, the crowd is like, eh, fuck you.
You fucked up.
Awesome wants to powerbomb Storm to the floor, but Storm slips out. Storm then runs into a pop-up powerbomb and seemingly kicks out at 3.1, maybe before 3, but referee Slick Johnson says he pinned him, so your new U.S. champion, Mike Awesome.
Woo!
Whoa. Now hold on a minute, player.
I was, like, after all that, that's how Lance was going to lose? I don't know.
Rougeau says that this is, in fact, a 2, but, like, no, Awesome won. Rougeau then informs Dave Penzer that under Canadian rules, you must win with a 5 count. So we're back to Mike Awesome versus Lance Storm for the Canadian title.
I was waiting for them to say something that this was because of, like, the conversion rate or something.
They do.
Do they make a joke
about
that?
Yeah, they do, like, metric or something.
Well, I'm thinking, like, money conversion. Yeah.
The match restarts. Awesome catches Storm with an Alabama slam for a 3 count. Awesome locks in a dragon sleeper, and Lance Storm eventually tags out. So your new U.S. champion, Mike Awesome.
So again, it doesn't matter.
Now, hold on a minute, player. Rougeau informs Dave Penzer that under Canadian rules in Canada, you can only win by pin. So your match, Mike Awesome versus Lance Storm for the WCW Canadian title.
I was getting so annoyed at this point. I think this is where it turned from annoyed to kind of laughing.
Yeah, I really could have seen this going either way for you. Storm hits a Northern Lights suplex and tries for a bridging pin, but Awesome gets out at 3. Awesome hits a German suplex and then a vaulting shoulder drop for a 4 count, which pops the crowd. Awesome then hits a diving splash for a 5 count, and your new U.S. champion, Mike Awesome.
Again, this doesn't matter.
Now, like, hold on a minute, player. Jacques Rougeau informs Dave Penzer that under Canadian rules, after a 5 count, you have a 10 count to get to your feet.
Oh my God.
Storm gets to his feet at a count of 8, but is clotheslined to the floor. Awesome brings the table into the ring, but then gets low-blowed by Storm, and Storm hits a chair shot to the head, but Awesome kicks out at 4 in the ring. Storm lays Awesome on the table, but Awesome stops Storm going up top and goes for a belly-to-belly, but both men seem to, like, equally fall through the table. It was unclear if that was a botch or, like, by design. I thought it was by design.
It looked kind of cool, but it looked sloppy enough that it very much could have been a botch.
I think it was meant to be, like, equally hurt both men. Because if they just do a belly-to-belly, it's like, all right, one man did it and went through, and the other one should be fine.
Right.
So both men are down, and Jacques Rougeau announces that the first man to answer at count of 10 will win. Which doesn't really make sense, because what if they both get up?
Right.
But
again, another rule.
Rougeau comes in the ring to help count, and he's like, oh, I'll count Awesome. You count Storm.
Mm-hmm. What a helpful guy.
Awesome gets up. Ruggiero clocks him, knocks him back down. Lance Storm is up a 10.
So smooth, so clean. Loved it.
The crowd pops big for this complete bullshit finish.
I loved it.
So still Canadian champion, Lance Storm.
Hell yeah.
And to add to it, we hear music. It's Bret Hart.
Like, actually.
You were like, it's not going to be him. I'm like, no, it is.
Because you've told me, like, he comes back very briefly, but you didn't tell me when or where or what. And I really didn't think that he was coming out because so many people were like, well, you want Bret? And Lance Storm shook his head like, it's not going to be fucking Bret. I was very surprised, actually.
Bret comes into the ring, hugs Rougeau and Storm, and they all go to the back together. Was this stupid?
Yes.
Was this completely backwards to do in Canada? Yes.
Yes.
Did I love this? Absolutely.
So good.
I do think Duchess of Queensberry is a better version of this, but this is still great.
Oh, I loved it, though. It was so fucky, but like in the best way. Like citing your sources and citing your reasoning with a handbook. Loved it. They weren't just making up rules on the fly. Canadians are by the book.
And again, this is one where it's like there's a well-worked match in between all the chicanery.
All the faff. But this was fun faff. This wasn't insulting to the industry faff. This was funny.
It was also logical heel faff. Yes. Like, oh, we're just going to keep cheating.
Logical heel faff, but cheating with like loopholes. It wasn't pure cheating. It was like, oh, well, in section 3 of paragraph 8, like, come on. That's great.
And it was equal opportunity bullshit because it wasn't, oh, Lance can win with a 3. You have to do a 5. It was like,
right.
He got affected by all these because right. I did laugh at the under Canadian rules, you must win by pin. I'm like, Bret Hart, the sharpshooter, right. Yeah?
The man who's...
Lance Storm, the fucking Canadian Maple Leaf.
Chris Benoit. Sure, mate, whatever. Yeah. Go off.
Yeah, this was a good bit of fun. It did you think it kind of made Lance Storm look like shit?
No.
Okay.
I didn't think so.
That was their worry. Like, but Bret was like, I'm going to come out and, you know, I'm going to be endorsing a guy who just fucking lost 3 out of 4 times, but...
He was already a heel. This was very heelish to do. Yeah. I thought this was great.
The crowd being completely on board with it just adds a touch to this match that I'm like, why would you do this in Canada?
Right. But they were on board with it.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Emily, I have some good news for you. If you bought New Blood Rising, you can get a Vampiro t-shirt. Probably because no one's buying them.
Yeah, I bet they made more than 12 dozen of those shirts.
Backstage, Pamela is with Big Sexy. And she notes, yep, Goldberg's not here. Nash is annoyed.
No, he's not just annoyed. Pamela tells him that he had an accident. And Nash goes, yeah, the accident was pissing me off.
Nash notes he's going over on Steiner tonight.
Sure.
Let's move into a, I guess, impromptu match. Because it is Vampiro and the Great Muta versus Chronic for the WCW Tag Team titles.
Oh, God.
The match like kind of starts with Adams just pummeling Vampiro, sending him to the floor, and then everyone just stands around. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Vampiro hits a spin kick to Clark, but runs into a shoulder block, and then into a pop-up powerbomb. Chronic hits a double back elbow, and Muta tags in. Muta goes for a handspring back elbow, but Adams catches him with a full Nelson slam. Brian Clark hits a power slam to Vampiro, and Adams just sends him to the floor. Adams press slams Vampiro to the floor, who just lands on his feet first, like, not taking that bump even sure. remotely bad. Vampiro hits a Kidman-style face jam, and then hits kicks, and he and Muta start working the legs. Vampiro just knees Adams in the balls. DQ? Sure.
No, fuck it. Why are we calling why do we care?
I mean, a lot of the other matches at least had a weird stipulation, or was like a four-way. This is just a straight-up tag match.
Yeah.
The ref sees Muta attack Adams, and then gets mad at Clark for trying to come in the ring. Like, Mickey J, you're better than that. You're not Ginger Ref. Both men are down after hitting heads, and we get the hot tag to Brian Clark to absolutely no pop.
Nope. This audience is so dead. They got their guy, but he didn't come out to wrestle or do anything cool, so now they're like, well, fuck, what do we have to wait around for?
Brian Clark hits a meltdown on Vampiro, but then goes after Muta after Muta accidentally missed the ref. So, Emily, what is Chronic's finisher?
Something about getting high times?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know who doesn't know how to fucking do high times?
Chronic.
They are out of position every fucking time they try to do this move.
Yeah, it never
Brian
looks
Clark's
good.
Like, what fucking side do I go? Where do we face? I'm like, how do you get this wrong every time? It's the one move that you should know.
Right. That's why I don't know what it is, because they fuck it up every time.
I also swear they either include or drop the S, depending on the week. It's high time.
Well, are they spelling chronic with a K or chronic with a C? Is it a high time or a high times?
Well, it's about to be low times because Vampiro breaks up the high times and the crowd is suddenly distracted.
By what?
And now there's Nazis again.
I don't care for these new Nazis.
Yeah, the Harris brothers are here. They're back. Why? They H-bomb Brian Clark. Great Muta hits a moonsault and the Dark Carnival win the tag team titles.
Yay.
I am not excited for the Harris boys being back.
Why are they back?
Look.
Who missed them?
Putting aside the Nazi element of it, they just kind of suck.
Yes, they're not good in the ring. They've always kind of sucked. Again, in WrestleMania times, I watched them in WrestleMania 11 as the fucking Blue Brothers. They weren't good then either.
Yeah, this isn't even like a Ric Flair situation where like, yes, there is a terrible thing about you, but you're really talented, so we can potentially overlook that while we're watching it.
Yeah. That's how I feel about Logan Paul. Shitty ass human. Good wrestler. But not for these two.
Yeah.
They don't have that. They don't get that grace because they're not even good wrestlers. They're just shitty people and shitty wrestlers. So get the fuck out. How do you still have a contract? Oh, because you're big and you're white. That's why. Got it.
And I think they're friendly with Russo.
Probably.
This match itself was passable, I guess.
I'm tired of Muta. Muta kills matches for me.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm really like anti-Muta. And I saw way too much of him tonight.
I don't know. I'm not excited about any portion of this match and the results of it.
Vampiro is overdone for me at this point. Muta is bad.
Vampiro's face paint also just is now
it's just clowny looking.
Now
he just looks like a clown.
I don't know where the fuck the ICP are. Because I know they're not done.
Well, they're on Vampiro's face. That's where they are.
Yeah. And so I guess on Nitro, we're going to get Dark Carnival versus the Filthy Animals.
Yay.
I mean,
I miss the times where we could fast forward through matches, Nick.
That stopped at like episode 11.
I know, I miss it.
Or are you thinking of when we were watching SmackDown, we're like, oh, Test is here, fast forward.
That was nice too. That was also nice.
Yeah, I think we just miss having the little thumbnails of like, hey, what's coming up? And we can also see how long things are.
Yes.
Rip the network, man. It's fully gone.
Yeah. I will remember. I don't care enough.
Let's go backstage. Pamela Paulshock is with Booker T.
Yay.
Booker says Jarrett will have to kill him to take the title, and I hate to say it, I think Booker was reading cue cards in this promo.
I think so too.
Yeah, I'm just...
Honestly, in this show especially, Pamela felt unnecessary.
Well, because no... I don't know if it's Pamela, but like...
Well, Pamela's segments, I guess.
Yes, there is not a single even remotely like decent promo. No. Everything is paint by numbers.
Yes, it really is. Nothing interesting happens in them. No new information is given. It is so cut and dry. It's almost like going to a house show and getting a promo. It's very like, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. Goodbye. Like,
yeah,
you're not going to get anything out of it. What's the point?
Let's move into our second to last match of the night. It is a triple threat number one contenders match. It is Kevin Nash versus Scott Steiner versus maybe Goldberg. I did note no mention of Hall in the video package, even though that's how this feud started.
There was a sign in the audience that said, bring back Scott Hall.
Yeah, this whole story is basically, is it a work or is it a shoot? And I fucking hate it.
Well, isn't that all Kevin Nash is? We're just here for the business. We're just trying to get some money and we're just trying to, you know, be truthful to the audience.
Every time he cuts his promo about like, I want about like money and power or money in the belt. And
he just mumbles more.
But he's so close to a promo he does in TNA. Booker T's in the room. He's like the main event mafia. Like this industry is built on money, power, and respect. And every time in this whole promo, like five people, someone says respect, Booker goes, respect. And it's just become a meme.
Respect.
And every time he's like, this business is about money. And I'm like, respect.
And respect.
So Goldberg isn't here, but his music hits anyway. And I'm like, was the crowd even told about the accident?
I don't know. They might not have been. When would they have been told?
I don't know. But Goldberg doesn't come out. The theme then plays again. No Goldberg. So Nash and Steiner go immediately into the corner. Scott Hudson asks if this is going to be a shoot fight start to finish.
I did kind of respect at the beginning of this match, though, when the music played for the second time, both Scott and Nash like looked at each other like, fuck this. Let's just wrestle. Let's just do it. Like, fuck that guy. Stop waiting for him. We're just going to do this and just get in and get out. So I did respect that.
Nash and Steiner brawl at ringside until Goldberg runs out with a chair.
So why did we do that?
I don't know. his stomach and arm are taped up, potentially from, like, I guess, road rash or who knows.
We never get to find out.
Goldberg hits Nash, but Steiner hits him from behind, which brings them into the ring. Steiner hits a T-bone as the crowd chants, "We want Hall." Goldberg hits a shoulder block and a thrust kick. Nash slips on the top rope, getting in, looked really wobbly.
It looked really sad. It was a little pathetic. Poor guy.
Nash and Goldberg trade punches as Scott Hudson starts talking about the booking committee for Starrcade and how Nash went over.
Oh my God.
Steiner intervenes, hitting a spinning belly to belly on Nash. Steiner hits an elbow drop and tells the ref he sucks after a kickout.
Oh my God.
Goldberg hits a gut wrench suplex on Steiner and both men are down on a clothesline. Nash hits a sidewalk slam on Steiner, then a big boot to Goldberg. Kevin Nash gets him out and goes for the jackknife, but Goldberg pushes him away.
No.
He's not going to go up for the powerbomb.
No.
Yeah, Goldberg just awkwardly stands there. They look at each other, and Goldberg walks to the back. But first, Vince Russo comes out to go, "Get back in the ring." What does Goldberg tell him, Emily?
Fuck you.
Is it a work or is it a shoot? Oh. So, yeah. Steiner hits Nash with a chair at ringside. His commentary is just insufferable with the shoot bullshit.
Yeah, they really are.
I'm thinking Goldberg was supposed to go up for the jackknife. Wouldn't do it. He swerved Kevin Nash.
Shut the fuck up. Can we just end this match?
Commentary notes they're off format and Kevin Nash is a professional and he should have punched out Goldberg. I mean, Goldberg wouldn't have gone down in like one punch, but...
He's professional, so he should have punched his opponent?
Quote, "If the jackknife powerbomb was part of this design, what are they going to do now? Improvise?"
Oh my God.
But Steiner picks up Nash and hits a backbreaker. As a commentator, oh my God, that's so impressive. Like, he's almost dropping him that whole time.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
Nash gets a boot up in the corner, and Medeja comes out as Nash wants a choke slam. She takes out the ref, low blows Nash. Commentary that implies she went into business for herself here.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
I don't know.
Everything she's doing is helping Scott.
Well, obviously the finish was already supposed to happen, so this is all a shoot now, Emily.
What? But even so, how is her helping Scott Steiner going into business for herself?
Nash low blows Steiner, Medeja elbow drops Nash in the balls. Nash hits a DDT, but Medeja breaks up the pin. Steiner jumps on Nash's back, but Nash gets him off. Big boot, jackknife, pin. And he went up for it, Goldberg.
God!
Nash wins and is the number one contender.
This was insufferable.
Commentary tells us to read into that what we will and calls Goldberg a crybaby.
Oh, so we shouldn't read into it what we will because you're going to tell us what to feel right now.
I am so fucking mad that this can't be the worst bit.
Yeah.
It absolutely deserves it. And on any other fucking show, it would be. Who are you booking for, Vince Russo?
Himself.
Because people either aren't going to get it or they're not going to believe it.
Or they're not going to care.
Yeah. I know the ads for Fall Brawl are Goldberg went against the script at New Blood Rising. And I just...
Who could care?
Yeah, I mean, is this meant to be a face? Is Goldberg meant to be a face now? Because he's anti-Russo, but he's not professional. I
have no idea what they're going for. Honestly, I just don't know.
And that's probably the most damning part of this.
Yeah.
Is that people who, you know, are fairly in on things and watch this show every week don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah. Like, who is this for? Is this for the new person who's coming in blind? Or is this for the ignorant fan who is just here to watch for fun?
There's also the element of comedy that we are expected to believe that Scott Steiner is among the super professional people in the company.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't even care about the in-ring work. This
is just garbage.
Honestly, it was probably fine.
It wasn't that good.
It was probably fine. I don't. But yeah, oh, it's a swerve. It's a shoot, bro. Oh, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I know what's going to happen, Vince. People are going to fucking stop watching. That's what's going to happen.
Yes, and they do. That's why this has 85,000 buys.
Let's move into our poor, poor main event. You don't deserve to be on a show like this.
No.
And I'll say, this match is fine.
It's not
absolutely
great.
Fine.
It's not, like, incredible. It's fine.
But it just looks so good in comparison to everything else in this show. But our main event is Booker T versus Jeff Jarrett for the WCW title. We get a video package, and then it's Michael Buffer time.
It's Michael Buffer time!
Which, I don't know why this is the first time I noticed him around the ring afterwards.
Yeah, because I don't know that he always sits and sticks around.
I don't know.
I feel like he just does his thing and then leaves.
I mean, but I guess he would announce the winner, right? I guess I've not really taken much note of him, because why are they still fucking paying him?
That's the real question, because I don't know that he does.
He must have some guarantees or something, because there's no reason for him to still be on contract.
I really don't think he announces the winner of matches. I'm trying to think back.
I did note the NWO continues to live on through Jeff Jarrett's shirt.
Oh my god, he's not going to get new gear.
Well, to be fair, that's on marketing. They got to make him a new shirt.
Yeah, but again, how long has it not been the NWO? It's been a minute.
Technically since April.
Yeah, so get this man a new shirt.
Probably even before that, but Jarrett attacks Booker getting in the ring and stomps the knee. Booker fires back with punches and hits a spinning kick and a pop-up powerbomb. Booker kicks Jarrett to the floor and they brawl around ringside. Booker pulls Jarrett crotch first into the ring post twice and then goes up top but misses a missile dropkick. Looked really sloppy.
Yeah, did not look good.
Like, I thought he actually hurt himself, but no, he's fine. Jarrett goes back to working the leg and smashes injured leg around the ring post. Jarrett grabs a chair and hits Booker's knee into the ring post and then uses the edge of the chair on Booker's knee and drops him onto the barricade. In the ring, Jarrett locks in a Boston Crab, but Booker powers the ropes. Jarrett goes for his chair offense, but both men hit a clothesline in the ring. Booker hits a spine buster, then a scissor kick, and a spin-a-rooney, which bumps the ref.
How did that happen?
His in the spin, his hand like comes back and hits the ref.
And
that's it.
Knocks the ref out?
Yeah.
Jesus. Okay, I thought I missed like his
No,
leg
I had to back it up, but
something.
I'm like, no, his fucking hand at the very end.
Okay.
Jarrett smashes his guitar over Booker's knee. No dimes were drawn. Jarrett locks in a figure four, and the ref is alive. Booker gets to the ropes after like a minute and a half. He's in it for a fucking while. The ref then also has a real slow count for Jarrett to break the hold. It's like that. It's that typical one. Come on, Jeff, you gotta break.
Is this not the second ref?
No, I think it's the
same
first ref.
There's three refs eventually. I think this is the second ref at this point.
So this is the same ref as before, but he's going to get bumped again.
Oh, okay.
Because Jarrett grabs the title, accidentally hits like Johnson. Booker adjusts the table at ringside, hits a bookend choke slam from the apron. Like, he is not going down with Jarrett for this move. Jarrett goes through the table, and then we get Ginger Ref coming out, just looking confused. Good guy Booker breaks the 10 count so he can win honorably. Jarrett gets his foot on the ropes on a pin attempt and grabs a chair. He does a sneaky low blow right in front of the ref and then just weakly swings the chair back and hits the ref.
Sure.
So, it was a really weak chair shot.
It was really weak.
Jarrett hits a stroke onto the chair set up in the ring. Charles Robinson runs out so fast that Jarrett looks confused.
He zooms.
Because he, gets up to, all right, well, you know, the pin's not going to count. And, Charles is there ready to count. He's like, oh, shit.
I should have held it, yeah. But Charles Robinson's known for his speed. Like, that whole meme about, he's turned into a gif of his own sort of, running down the ramp.
WrestleMania 24?
Yeah, there you go.
Booker hits a neck breaker on the chair, and then Booker catches Jarrett for a bookend, but Jarrett hits the leg to get out. Booker catches Jarrett again, hits the bookend for the win, and retains the WCW title.
Yay.
Not bad.
It was fine. It was a good match. That reaction was not worthy. It was a good match. Glowing on this card. But it wasn't exciting.
Yeah. I mean, it was two guys who can wrestle, just working an actual logical heel face story, Booker working from underneath. I'm just ready for Jarrett to be out of the title picture. This is his fifth pay-per-view main event in a row.
Oh, really?
And I'm just...
God.
Yeah.
Because nothing has changed. His promos are exactly the same. His movesets are exactly the same. Every single match is rinse and repeat for him.
Yeah.
He's good, but nothing is making me want to continue to watch him.
Yeah, and they keep making Booker the underdog so much that it makes it feel like he's not in the top tier.
Right.
It's kind of unfortunate. They need him to have some decisive wins.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on this match?
On this match, not necessarily. No. I mean, I will give commentary a little bit of credit that it was they smartly pointed out when Jeff Jarrett was really working over Booker T's knee that if Jarrett
they
takes out
the
match. Knee, I mean, they smartly pointed out that if Jarrett takes out Booker's knee, it wipes out 90% of Booker T's offense. So I mean, I thought that was kind of smart. I'll give him that.
A little bit. The problem is when you actually think about it, like, it's like if you take out the legs of anybody and they can't stand, nobody can do offense.
They were naming off all the moves that Booker would not be able to do without his legs. So, you know, I'll give it to him. Whatever. Bar is low.
Yeah. Overall, this is one of the worst pay-per-views I've ever seen.
This was laughably bad, but also, like, iconic.
Yeah, I do think it's outside that 100-episode celebration. I don't think it's in those.
No. Yeah, you're right. But...
Actually, I think I would put this in a similar vein as WrestleMania 9.
No, because this didn't have a... Well...
Swap the bird for Judy and...
No. I feel like 9 had more for it than just the bird. Like, we joke about the bird, and I love the bird, but I think 9 had more ambiance, more aura, more spectacle. Spectacle, that's a good word, than this.
To be fair, all the spectacle for this show is just in the Lance Storm match.
Yes, literally. There is stuff to, like, worthy of watching on this. Like, I think Judy on a Forklift will always be a recommended watch. But, like...
It's not silly enough.
Oh, I disagree. I thought it was quite silly. Fucking David Arquette ran out, Nick. What do you mean?
We both really like the Canadian match. Mm-hmm. I get if that's not your cup of tea.
Yeah.
So, if it's not a cup of tea, holy shit, the entire... I'd say middle, but literally everything besides the first and last match is a black hole.
Yeah.
I like the Canadian match, but, like, everything else is just a death spot.
Yeah.
Like, the fact the crowd was still into the main event, like, credit to them.
The fact they were still
them.
There.
Yeah.
I think I would have left.
Which point would have got you?
If I was Canadian, I think I would probably have left... Probably after the Dark Carnival Chronic match.
I would say just leave after the Lance Storm match. Leave on a good note.
No, because I would see that good note and be like, oh, okay, there's something worth staying around for. And then I'd watch the next match and be like, ah, never mind.
And the crowd didn't have to deal with all the commentary, is it a worker, is it a shoot bullshit. Like,
there is that.
Yeah. That is like almost in every fucking match in this show, it feels like.
Yes.
There has to be some sort of, oh, we know insider terms. Yes, because you're a fucking insider.
Yeah.
Of course you do.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
And it's so Vince Russo. It's just like, either clue the audience in and not make it an inside joke, or just don't fucking say it.
I am ready to get into best bit, worst bit, MVP. How about you?
I think so. I think let's do it. Let's wrap this up.
All right, Emily, what did you pick for your best bit?
Nick, it's gotta be Judy. It has to be Judy on a forklift. It has to be.
I'm giving it to Canadian rules.
You're wrong.
Emily, what is your worst bit of the show?
It's gotta be Judy.
Are you fucking kidding me?
It's gotta be! That segment is the best and the worst thing to happen to this company.
The problem is, I set the precedent for this with Jesse Ventura conspiracy theory.
Yes, you did.
So this is allowed, but I hate it.
Get wrecked! Honorable mention to the first match, the ladder match.
No, well, we're in worst bit.
Oh, for best. Honorable mention for best for the ladder match.
The worst bit has to be the Miss Hancock versus Major Guns.
Oh, God. No, yeah, you're probably right. But I can't not give... It's got to be Judy. The rip off the clothes match has to just be ejected from my brain. That cannot be
just
on a
fired into the sun.
Just burn my eyes. Just forget that it ever happened. It cannot be on a spreadsheet for me.
An obvious honorable mention to the triple threat and the first tag match.
All of it.
Yeah, honorable mention the whole show.
Yeah.
All right, Emily. And then who did you pick for your MVP? And I swear to you cannot pick
it's
Judy
not
Bagwell.
Judy. I did not pick Judy Bagwell. I gave it to Jacques Rougeau.
Oh, okay.
I did. He was fighting for his mans. He was upholding his rules. He was playing it by the book. And he was making sure his mans won.
He was doing good panto with it, yes. of like holding
literally,
up the rule book.
He was feeding into the character, and he was making that match work.
I kind of noted mine earlier. I'm going to give mine to Shannon Moore.
Okay.
I think he really, like, if you go back and watch that match, he stands out. Like, okay. He's all over that, especially partially because Evan Courageous can't work the match.
Yeah. So he has to, like, double up almost.
Shane Helms just doesn't pick up the slack on his end, in my opinion. I mean, he does fine, but he does the work of one man and not two.
Damn. Okay, yeah. I'll take that.
So, yeah. I'm going to give it to good old Shannon Moore, the Book of Dilly Gaff.
Okay, I will take that. That's fair enough. God, I feel like it's taken us so long to get here to this, and the fact that it's over and done is crazy.
Yeah. That's the one and the only New Blood Rising.
Yeah, when Peacock didn't autoplay to the next episode, I was like, oh god.
I mean, we joked NXT didn't even like steal the concept.
No. It's not worth it. It wasn't good enough.
But next up, we're headed towards Fall Brawl.
Fucking Fall Brawl.
But you can listen to all of our back catalog of episodes everywhere podcasts are found, except for SoundCloud.
You can also follow us on all of our social media. We're on Facebook at Butts in the Seats Podcast. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Butts in the Pod. And we're also on Blue Sky at Butts in the Seats. You can also follow us on Patreon if you ever feel so inclined. $5 a month gets you about 25 bonus episodes plus some WrestleMania reviews. We do a lot of fun, stupid stuff over there. There's a lot of bonus content.
Yep, and we put a little taste of that here on the main feed. The January 4th, 2010 TNA Impact, Time for a Change.
We are going through the whole Monday Night Wars saga on TNA as well.
Hole is just giving that so much credit.
It's significantly shorter.
We are doing it to completion.
Yes.
But Emily, any final thoughts before we close the book on New Blood Rising?
Now that we've passed Viagra on a pole and Judy Bagwell on a forklift, I don't know what to look forward to.
The San Francisco 49ers match.
Oh, God.
But until Emily figures out what that is, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts in the Seats Podcast.
Bye.